On Mothering Sunday, the preacher has choices for the lectionary readings. You can either choose specific readings for the day for Mothering Sunday, which are usually about Mary or Hannah, for example, or you can choose to follow the lectionary readings for the fourth Sunday in Lent. In year C, that's this year, Luke's year, that reading is the parable of the prodigal and his brother. It's such a well-known and well-loved story. But it seems an odd choice for Mothering Sunday. Where are the women in the story? Where's the mother? If you think back to the pictures you saw earlier, there was a very famous one there, which is Rembrandt's painting. Then if you get a very clear picture of Rembrandt's painting, you can see some shadowy figures in the background, which seem to include at least one woman. But in most reproductions you look at, those they just disappear altogether. In an attempt to redress the balance, we can choose to be more inclusive by hearing the parables of the shepherd looking for a lost sheep and a woman looking for a lost coin, which we had today. Luke specifically places them together in his gospel. However, a few years ago, I wrote a story for Mothering Sunday. It's quite a long story, so I'm going to read it, and it's instead of a sermon today. It's called Grace's Story. Grace breathed a small sigh of relief as she put down her shopping bags in the hall, put her car keys on the hook, and turned to close the front door. She took her coat off and hung it up, and then bent down to take off her shoes and put them away in the cupboard before putting her slippers on. The house was quiet, but Grace welcomed the silence and peace today. She'd forgotten that it was school half term, and the town centre had been busy and noisy. The queue in the post office had been long, but she had promised Mrs. Freeman that she would post the parcel to Australia today. Grace had also waited for some time to collect Mrs. Freeman's prescription too, and then when she dropped it off, Mrs. Freeman had kept her talking for a long time about all her ailments. Grace understood the loneliness of her housebound neighbour and listened patiently. But now she'd be glad to sit down and have a cup of tea and a rest. She picked up the shopping bags and walked to the kitchen and put them on the kitchen table. There was no rush to unpack them. She'd do that later. Grace picked up the kettle and ran some water and put the kettle on to boil. When she'd made the tea, Grace went into the lounge and sat down. She'd put the post down on the coffee table just before she went out and hadn't looked at it. Just a bank statement and some junk mail. But there was also a letter from her old school friend Judith. Grace smiled to herself as she read about her friend's walking holiday in Spain. Judith certainly wasn't ready to give in to old age in any way. As she put the letter down and picked up her mug, Grace suddenly noticed that her brooch was missing. With an exclamation of dismay, Grace automatically put her hand on her jumper, as if she would suddenly find that it wasn't missing after all. Grace stood up and looked around carefully, feeling down the sides of the armchair in case it had fallen off when she sat down. Just for a moment, a slight sense of panic took hold. But Grace told herself to calm down and think logically. She thought back to what she'd done when she came home and whether she could remember if the brooch had still been pinned to her jumper. Yes, her finger had just brushed against it when she'd unbuttoned her coat. Grace felt relieved that she hadn't lost it in town. She went into the hallway and turned on the light so that she could see more clearly, but nothing glinted on the hall floor. Grace went to her coat and shook it, and then looked in the shoe cupboard. She even shook her shoes in case the brooch had fallen off when she changed them. Going into the kitchen, she looked around the floor and in the kitchen sink, and she even looked in the tea bag tin. Nothing. No sign of the brooch anywhere. Excuse me. Grace returned to the lounge and sat down again with a heavy heart. The brooch wasn't valuable, but Ted had bought it for her when their second daughter Miriam was born. They'd had very little money, but Ted was always so good at remembering to mark the special occasions. A necklace when Anna was born, a brooch for Miriam's birth, and later other gifts for anniversaries. Not extravagant, but full of meaning and memories. Glancing at the photo of Ted on the mantelpiece, Grace felt her eyes fill with tears. She'd got used to being on her own now, used to the quiet space surrounded by memories of love. But now the silence seemed lonely and painful. Her glance moved across to the photos of Anna and Miriam as little girls, as teenagers, and now as adults. Their births, just 3 years apart, had filled her and Ted with such joy. Grace looked at her daughters, looking so alike with their blue eyes and brown, softly curled hair. And yet they were so different in personality. Anna had always been calm and good-tempered, even as a baby. She'd worked hard at school and had been a likeable and popular child with lots of friends. She was a bright child and had steadily worked her way through exams without fuss, and then went on to university and trained to be a doctor. Anna was now married to a consultant neurologist, Michael, and they had a 7-year-old daughter, Sophie. Fortunately, they lived nearby and Grace saw them frequently, often looking after Sophie when Anna worked as a locum GP. But Miriam was a different story. Another bright little girl, full of life, with a mischievous grin that everyone loved. But with Miriam, laughter very quickly turned to tears and tantrums when she didn't get her own way. And as she got older, the rebellious streak grew even stronger. Whilst Grace and Ted were glad she could stand up for herself, and often she would speak up fiercely for others too, her defiant attitude got her into all kinds of trouble at school, and she was suspended several times. Grace and Ted had also discovered that she was truanting frequently and spending the day hanging around the town with older lads who dropped out of college. The house was certainly filled with noise then. Loud arguments, even louder music and slamming doors. Grace and Ted tried everything they could to help Miriam, including family therapy, trying to understand their daughter, trying to help her understand that they loved her, come what may. But nothing seemed to work, and it had been a heartbreaking time with many tears shed. Even calm and kind Anna got fed up with it all, and they'd faced her anger as she accused them of spending so much time on Miriam's problems that they weren't giving her enough support through her GCSEs and A-levels. And that was probably true. Grace and Ted sadly watched the close relationship the sisters had in childhood fall apart. Miriam left school at 16 with few qualifications, but she did manage to get a job in a local pet shop and hold on to it. She also joined the local Friends of the Earth, and that seemed to channel her energy and enthusiasm and passion, and life became a little calmer for a while. But they were horrified when Miriam turned 18 and announced that she was going to travel around the world. She'd saved some money, but she wanted Grace and Ted to help her out too. They talked about it for hours, concerned that she just wasn't mature enough, concerned for her safety. But in the end, they'd given in, and off she went. Grace and Ted watched their daughter leave, hearts filled with such mixed emotions. Anxiety and sadness coupled with love, and even a little pride. Despite all the traumas, they'd always admired Miriam for the courage of her convictions. Whilst Grace feared that they really had lost their daughter now, Ted had always encouraged her by saying that Miriam knew, deep down, that they loved her, and perhaps this time away from home would help her to find her way in life, help her to grow as a person. And if things didn't work out, Miriam could always come home again. And as the weeks and months and years passed, Ted's faith in Miriam was proved true. At first, they didn't hear very much, but then the letters and phone calls increased, and Miriam sounded happier than she had done for a while. So they heard about work in bars and hotels in Australia, even a stint on a sheep station, and then some time travelling in the Far East. They were not surprised then to hear that Miriam had got a job with a small development agency working in East Africa. So letters and photos were filled with Miriam digging wells and teaching English in remote village schools. The Miriam they'd known was still putting the world to rights, but now her passion for justice was put to use in the service of others, and her thoughts and reflections sounded so much more mature now. But they were stunned when Miriam turned up without warning 4 years ago, with baby Josh in her arms. There'd been lots of boyfriends along the way for Miriam, but they'd never got the impression of anything very serious. And Miriam to this day had never said anything much about Josh's father. Grace had often wondered if Josh's father was already married. Miriam seemed very anxious when she arrived back in England, worried about what they would say and think about Josh, concerned that she had nowhere to live and very little money. But Grace and Ted had long come to terms with the unconventional ways of their beloved daughter. They were delighted that she'd come home at last, and with another grandchild. And Josh was such a delight. Somehow, he just changed everything. The room just lit up when he was present. When he laughed with that throaty chuckle, the world was filled with energy and joy. The relationship between Anna and Miriam had remained cool and strained over the years. Most of their news about each other was filtered through Grace and Ted. But now they were both mothers of small children, and they'd found common ground again. And Anna's daughter, Sophie, absolutely adored her younger cousin. Grace and Ted had been concerned about their first grandchild. She was lovely, so kind and caring, but such an old soul, as Ted called her, wise and serious beyond her years. But Josh's joyous and adventurous approach to life had brought out Sophie's playfulness And Gracie's house was filled with the sound of laughter when the children were there. Grace wiped the tears from her eyes. She was so glad Ted had been around for at least a couple of years to get to know his grandchildren. He just loved being a grandfather, and the children loved him. Miriam and Josh had moved out after a few months. Miriam found a job managing a local organic food and health store and cafe. It was a popular meeting place for all kinds of people involved in peace and justice campaigns and ecological issues, and Miriam was in her element. There was a spacious flat above the shop, and Miriam and Josh were enjoying making a home there, and they came to visit Grace regularly, especially to help in the garden. Suddenly, there was a knock at the door, and Grace was interrupted in her recollections and realised that it was getting dark and she hadn't put any lights on in the house. As she opened the door, there they all were, talking and smiling. Miriam and Josh bounding in full of energy, Anna and her tall husband Michael looking a little tired, and Sophie following behind more slowly. "We have lots of veg left today, Mum," called Miriam, walking into the kitchen. "So we thought we'd call Anna and come over to cook a meal here today." "Are you all right, Grandma?" asked Sophie. "We noticed the lights weren't on," said Anna. "Oh yes," Grace replied. "I just got a bit lost in memories because I lost my brooch today, the one that your dad gave me when Miriam was born." "And that made you sad," said Sophie, putting her hand into Grace's hand and looking at Grace as if she could see into the depths of Grace's heart. "Well, yes, it did," smiled Grace. "Can we help you look for it, Grandma?" piped up Josh. "Let's do that. We want to help." So taking both her grandchildren by the hand, Grace walked them through all the places in the house where she thought the brooch might be, but they still couldn't find it. "Never mind," she said. "Perhaps you'd like to get Twister out and play whilst dinner is cooking." Leaving Michael to organise that, she went through to the kitchen where Anna and Miriam were already busy preparing food, sharing their news of their day with each other. "We noticed you've got some shopping here, Mum," Miriam said. Grace had forgotten all about it, and she started to unpack the bits and pieces and put them away, a couple of packets of her favourite biscuits from Marks and Spencer, and some hand wash from the chemist. And right at the bottom of the bag, there it was, the silver mounting of the brooch glinting in the light. She laughed in delight. "Well, look what I found," she said to her daughters. "It must have fallen off when I took off my coat and shoes and landed in the bag. I think that calls for a celebration. Let's open that bottle of bubbly you bought me for my birthday. I'll go and tell the children the good news." Grace walked through the hall to the lounge and paused in the doorway. There they were, twisting themselves into all kinds of shapes on the floor. Michael there too. Grace grinned and thought his patients might be quite surprised to see their consultant upside down. And there was Sophie, fair hair falling over that normally serious face, now lit up with laughter. And there was Josh, black curly hair and dark eyes, urging them all on with a big grin on his face. Delicious smells were coming from the kitchen, and Grace heard the chink of glasses. Happiness filled her heart as she stepped into the room to tell them that she'd found what she'd been looking for.